This is David Patmore. Welcome to this podcast about the A to Z of conductors. The first item we're going to start with is A for Ernest Ansermet, one of the great ballet conductors of the 20th century and for many years chief conductor of Serge Diaghilev's Ballet Russe. In this position, he led the first performances of La Boutique Fantasque by Rossini and Respighi. And this recording which we're going to hear is him conducting the London Symphony Orchestra in Kingsway Hall in one of the great early Decca FFRR, or full frequency range, recordings. Next item is B for Beecham, Thomas Beecham. Thomas Beecham was probably most famous as one of the great conductors of the music of Frederick Delius, of German extraction but born in Bradford in the north of England. Legend has it that on one occasion Beecham, late for rehearsal, was extremely angry for reasons not known and charged into the rehearsal room with the orchestra and simply said, "Delius, village Romeo and Juliet, walk to the Paradise Garden." The orchestra duly commenced playing this work, and by the end of it, it only lasts about 7 or 8 minutes, Beecham was a changed man, all smiles and all serenity. Such is the power of the music of this wonderful composer, of whom Beecham remains a peerless interpreter. C is for Albert Coates. Albert Coates was one of the great conductors of the interwar years, particularly famed for his interpretations of the music of Wagner. His background was unusual. He was born of a Yorkshireman who lived in Russia and whose wife was also of English extraction but herself born in Russia. So Coates combined English and Russian sensibilities. He studied music with the great Arthur Nikisch in Leipzig and was for several years Nikisch's assistant at the Leipzig Opera. So energetic was his conducting that at one point Nikisch suggested that he didn't need a baton, he appeared to be using a whip. Here we hear his very exciting 1925 recording of the prelude to Act 3 of Wagner's opera Lohengrin. Opera recordings are seldom seen as political acts, but during the Second World War, one recording was seen as a particularly powerful example of wartime resistance to the Nazi hegemony that held over Europe in the early 40s. This is Roger de Sommières' legendary recording of Debussy's opera Pelléas et Mélisande. This was recorded in 1941 in Paris, when Paris was under German occupation. The circumstances of recording were difficult. The electricity current was erratic, and members of the orchestra and the soloists were finding life hard. Things to eat were difficult to come by. Yet this recording, possibly more than many others, or any others even, encapsulates l'esprit français and the French determination both to protect and to cherish its great national culture. Thank you. Otto Klemperer was one of the select few conductors who knew personally the great Austrian composer Gustav Mahler. As a student, Klemperer conducted the offstage chorus of the Symphony No. 2, Resurrection, and he also made a piano transcription of the work, which he himself played to Mahler, under which Mahler was very enthusiastic. He recorded the Second Symphony, The Resurrection, on a number of occasions, but the first time was in 1951 in Vienna. He had a very sardonic sense of humour. On one occasion, he was rehearsing with his orchestra, and the time had passed at which normally the rehearsal would cease. Getting slightly concerned, the leader of the orchestra started to look at his watch in a very pronounced manner. Aware of what was happening, but determined not to give ground, Klemperer leant over and sardonically asked, "Is it working?" Another great conductor was the Polish conductor Artur Rodzinski, who was discovered conducting in Warsaw by Leopold Stokowski in the early 20s and invited to accompany Stokowski back to the USA. Here Rodzinski had a very distinguished career as chief conductor in succession of the Cleveland Orchestra, the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, and finally the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, with whom he worked for a year. It's well known that the New York Philharmonic has at times been described as Murder Incorporated, as it's one of the toughest orchestras for any conductor to deal successfully with. And legend has it that Rodzinski used to conduct with a six-shooter in his back pocket. Here we hear him in a very rare recording made for the small American budget label Remington. This was made with the Austrian Symphony Orchestra, or the Vienna Tonkünstler Orchestra, the third of the three orchestras based in Vienna, after the Vienna Philharmonic and the Vienna Symphony. Rodzinski made this after he'd returned to Europe following the end of his career in the USA, and for reasons which we're not clear about, he refused to sanction the public release of this recording. But Don Gabor, the founder of Remington Records, was not to be outdone. He marketed the record under Conductor X, but it didn't really sell very well and is now one of the rarest of LPs. I did once see a copy of this recording in a shop, or at least I saw a copy of the sleeve. When I picked it up, unfortunately, I found there was no record inside, but the music remains tremendously exciting. Thank you. Let's move on to another great European maestro, Hermann Scherchen. Scherchen was a pronounced anti-fascist. He spent the First World War in Russia and did not participate in hostilities. And in the period of the rise of the Nazi Party, he moved from Germany to Switzerland, where he remained for the rest of his life. He really came to fame after the war when he recorded extensively for the Westminster label. Conductors of Scherchen's caliber had tremendous technical capability. As an example, he was once engaged by Westminster to record Prokofiev's Scythian Suite, a work he'd not conducted before. For reasons we don't know, the full score never arrived at his home, so he was met by James Grayson, the producer of the recording, at the Viennese airport, and taken in a cab to the recording studios in Vienna, a journey of about half an hour. Grayson had with him the full score. Scherchen studied it in depth, went straight into the studio, recorded the work extremely successfully. Such was his tremendous capability. Edward Downes, who was a pupil of Scherchen and his assistant for a couple of years, remarks that on one occasion they were rehearsing a Bach cantata. The oboist failed at some point, and Scherchen whistled and sang the oboe part so accurately that some members of the orchestra were completely unaware of what was actually happening. Downes also tells a very funny story about the first time he met Scherchen. It was arranged that he would go to Scherchen's house in Switzerland, which he did just before Christmas. He knocked on the door, dark, cold, outside. The door suddenly opened, and there was Scherchen, stark naked. Such was to be their relationship. Another great conductor of the German school is Hans Schmidt-Eisenstedt. A tremendously musical conductor, Schmidt-Eisenstedt founded the North German Radio Orchestra after the war, but before the war he was active in Berlin, both in concerts and in opera. At Covent Garden he conducted rarely, but his appearances there were sources of great enjoyment and celebration. In the early 60s he conducted a legendary Tristan und Isolde, and in the early 70s he returned to conduct the Flying Dutchman. It was a reading of tremendous power. But here we hear him in a pre-war recording with the violinist Georg Kuhlenkampf of a Mozart Adagio for violin and orchestra. Truly a great maestro whose time perhaps has yet to come. Thank you. Another great conductor, also closely associated with Covent Garden, was the Hungarian Georg Solti, and we celebrate the 10th anniversary of his death in this year, 2007. Solti's career was stalled again by the Nazi phenomenon, which runs throughout European musical history, and American musical history for that matter, in the middle of the 20th century. It's the Great Divide. Anyway, Solti was stuck in Switzerland throughout most of the war, and eventually, as hostilities ceased, he was able to persuade Morris Rosengarten of Decca Records to let him make some records. Rosengarten was happy to oblige, but Solti's producer in London, Victor Olof, was less sure of his musicality. So while Solti, who had quickly become music director in Munich, was conducting Wagner at the Munich State Opera, Olof was reluctant to give him anything and ended up giving him a few popular items, such as the overture to The Light Cavalry by Suppe, which we're about to hear. Solti had to make the most of the circumstances, so this changes from being a tuneful, light operetta overture into one of the most fearsomely disciplined pieces of music that you could ever hope to hear, but the result is absolutely thrilling. We end with a relatively unknown waltz by Johann Strauss II, 1001 Nights, conducted by the great Felix Weingartner, another Central European conductor of tremendous genius, who for many years led the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, as well as the opera houses of Berlin and Vienna. He was noted throughout his lifetime as a paramount Beethoven interpreter, but he was also a great devotee of operetta, and was chief conductor at the Vienna Volksoper in the early 20s. In this very rare recording from 1931, made for the Columbia Company, Weingartner conducts the British Symphony Orchestra. This was made up of ex-servicemen who had formed an orchestra and was to disband shortly after this record. But the true Viennese lilt is certainly present, and I hope you too will enjoy 1001 Nights listening to many records recommended in the Naxos A to Z of conductors. Thank you, and goodbye.